Good morning, everyone. My name is Jeff. I'll be reading from Leviticus 15. It's on page 91 on the Bible at the back there. And hold on to your seats because it gets weird. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, when any man has an unusual bodily discharge, such a discharge is unclean." Told you. Whether it continues flowing from his body or is blocked, it will make him unclean. This is how his discharge will bring about uncleanliness. Any bed the man with a discharge lies on will be unclean, and anything he sits on will be unclean. Anyone who touches his bed must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean until evening. Whoever sits on anything the man with a discharge sat on must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. Whoever touches the man who has a discharge must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. If the man with the discharge spits on anyone who is clean, they must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. Everything the man sits on while riding will be unclean, and whoever touches any of the things that were under him will be unclean till evening. Whoever picks up those things must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. Anyone the man with a discharge touches without rinsing with his hands with water must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be clean till evening. A clay pot that the man touches must be broken, and any wooden article is to be rinsed with water. When the man is cleansed from his discharge, he is to count off 7 days for his ceremonial cleansing. He must wash his clothes and bathe himself with fresh water, and he will be clean. On the 8th day, he must take 2 doves or 2 young pigeons and come before the Lord to the entrance to the tent of the meeting and give them to the priest. The priest is to sacrifice them, the one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. In this way, he will make atonement before the Lord for the man because of his discharge. When a man had an emission of semen, he must bathe with his whole body with water, and he will be unclean till evening. Any clothing or leather that has semen on it must be washed with water, and it will be unclean till evening. When a man has a sexual relations with a woman and there is an emission of semen, both of them must bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. When a woman has a regular flow of blood, the impurity of a monthly period will last 7 days, and anyone who touches her will be unclean till evening. Anything she lies on during her period will be unclean, and anything she sits on will be unclean. Anyone who touches her will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. Anyone who touches anything she sits on will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. Whether it is the bed or anything else she sits on, when anyone touches it, they will be unclean till evening. If a man has sexual relations with her and her monthly flow touches him, he will be unclean for 7 days. Any bed he lies on will be unclean. When a woman has a discharge of blood for many days at a time, other than her monthly period, or has a discharge that continues beyond her period, she will be unclean as long as she has the discharge, just as in the days of her period. Any bed she lies on while her discharge continues will be unclean, as is her bed during her monthly period, and anything she sits on will be unclean as during her period. Anyone who touches them will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with the water, and they will be unclean till evening. When she is cleansed from her discharge, she must count off 7 days, and after that she will be ceremonially clean. On the 8th day, she must take 2 doves or 2 young pigeons and bring them to the priest at the entrance to the tent of meeting. The priest is to sacrifice one for the sin offering and the other for the burnt offering. In this way, he will make atonement for her before the Lord for the uncleanliness of her discharge. You must keep the Israelites separate from things that make them unclean, so they will not die in their uncleanness for defiling my dwelling place, which is among them. These are the regulations for a man with a discharge, for anyone made unclean with an emission of semen, for a woman in her monthly period, for a man or woman in the discharge, and for a man who has sexual relations with a woman who is ceremonially unclean. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning, church. What a doozy, hey? Thanks, Scott. Now, I'll have to apologize. I'm a little bit unwell, so if you hear me cough, just ignore it. But my name's Jacob. I'm one of the apprentices here at Trinity Parry Hills. And I want you to imagine a scenario with me. It's a Friday afternoon, and as you're coming home from work or wherever you're coming home from, you go out and you check your mailbox. And you open it up anyway, and you see this big, elegant-looking envelope with a fancy wax seal on it. So you pick it up, and on the front it has your full name written in cursive writing. It's even got your middle name on it. Anyway, you open the envelope and you pull out this big, beautiful-looking parchment. It looks like some royal decree from the Middle Ages. And you start to read it, and sure enough, it's a letter from the King of England asking you personally to come to Buckingham Palace and to meet him face to face. Wow. Well, after the disbelief wears off, you're filled with excitement and joy. The king wants to meet with you. But soon, this strange feeling sets in, and a question bugs your mind. How am I supposed to come before the king without offending him? What are the protocols? I feel so common. I feel so unworthy. How do I make sure that the king doesn't take one look at my daggy clothes and throw me into the dungeon or say, off with his head? Well, maybe it's not the medieval times. But still, what if you mess something up? I know I might seriously offend His Excellency with my bogan Aussie mannerisms. Well, I think this is not too different from what the Israelites are facing here in Leviticus. We've heard earlier in Leviticus that God, who is now dwelling amongst His people, He wants them to meet with Him. He's invited them to enjoy being with Him, to offer Him thanks and enjoy His blessings. And as we've seen, there are certain rules that must be followed in order for this to happen. Well, today we're going to look at these, let's be honest, really tricky chapters in Leviticus. I mean, they talk about childbirth, skin diseases, molds, semen and periods, and other bodily discharges. And obviously, when Scott told me I'd be preaching this part of Leviticus, I wasn't very thrilled. And it is going to take a bit of work. But I want to try to answer this question. How do we approach God and not die? Well, firstly, to answer this question, we need to ask what it is that prevents us from approaching God. And I want to be clear, there is a difference here between us and the Israelites. But in order to answer this, we're going to start by looking at what prevented the Israelites here. So what prevented them from approaching God? Well, as we look over these four chapters, we can see this idea of uncleanness coming up time and time again. And it's kind of summarized right at the end. Look with me in chapter 15, verse 31. You must keep the Israelites separate from things that make them unclean, so they will not die in their uncleanness for defiling my dwelling place, which is among them. We can see that there are certain things which make the Israelites ritually unclean. And if they come before God in His sanctuary, they'll actually die. I mean, this sort of makes sense, right? If you came before King Charles in Buckingham Palace, there it is, and you were covered in mud or filth and you were just spreading it everywhere in his house, you'd think that might not go down so well. I mean, even if you went to one of your neighbors or your friends' houses, you wouldn't want to be covered in mud or smelling like you just went fishing or something. See, there's something right about not wanting to bring uncleanness into other people's houses. So they'd especially not want to do this in God's house, right? But surely death is a bit too far, you know? It sounds a bit overkill. Well, remember back to last week in chapter 11. What does God say? In verse 44, he says, "I am the Lord your God. Consecrate yourselves and be holy, because I am holy." God is holy. He's set apart. And he wants his people to be holy too, set apart from the nations around them. You might think death is a bit extreme, but remember, this is the God of the universe. He created all things. He holds all of time and space in his hands. And he's chosen Israel to be his people and to dwell with them. So if they go and defile his dwelling place, well, that's a big deal. And there are big consequences. So what can we learn from this today? Well, I think this gives us a clear picture of God's holiness. I mean, he's still the same God of the universe today. So if we want to come before him, if we want to dwell with him, we need to be in the right state first. The consequences are pretty severe. Well, more on that later. But this uncleanness stood in the way of the Israelites coming before God. So the next obvious question is, well, what is this uncleanness? And what is it for us? How does this ritual uncleanness of the Israelites in Leviticus translate to us today, who don't have these laws anymore? And again, we need to answer this question for us by first looking at them. Now, we didn't read all four chapters out, but just to give you a brief summary, we can see that in chapter 12, childbirth causes uncleanness. In chapters 13 and 14, skin diseases, mold on clothes, mold in buildings causes uncleanness. And in chapter 15, which we did read, bodily emissions like semen and period blood causes uncleanness. Now, I want to be very clear in saying this. The ritual uncleanness of the Israelites here, it's not the same as sin. It is not sin. There is clearly nothing sinful about giving birth, having a skin disease or mold, or having sexual relations within a marriage, or having a period. These are not sinful things. But this outward or ritual uncleanness, it does give us some hints about our state before God. See, there's something else spoken of in the Bible which prevents people from approaching God. And it applies to all of us today. You may have guessed what it is, but let's keep going through the passage and see what other hints this ritual uncleanness gives us. I want to look at three qualities of uncleanness here. We can see that this uncleanness is outwardly obvious. I mean, if you look at the skin diseases in chapters 13, it's made obvious to everyone that the person is unclean. I mean, it's on their skin, it's on the surface for everyone to see. And look at what they have to do in chapter 13, verses 45, 46. "Anyone with such a defiling disease must wear torn clothes, let their hair be unkempt, cover the lower part of their face, and cry out, 'Unclean, unclean.' As long as they have the disease, they remain unclean." There's a clear and obvious reality to this uncleanness, isn't there? You might think, well, how does this relate to us now? Well, I want to jump forward to another part of the Bible. We're going to jump forward to Hebrews chapter 4, verses 13. And it's up on the screen now, I think, yes. "Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him to whom we must give account." We can see here that everything is obvious to God. God sees all. There's nothing hidden from him. Nothing at all. I wonder how that makes you feel. Do you feel happy and comfortable that God knows everything? Or maybe you feel a little bit uncomfortable. Maybe you're starting to feel a little bit nervous about everything about you being known. I read this article on the BBC. It was about how UK police caught a car thief by using this trap car. So what they did, they staged this trap car, and when someone entered it illegally, it would spray out this vapor. So they put it in the place where they thought this guy would be, and sure enough, he broke into the car, and the vapor was sprayed on his face, and he didn't really know about it, and he thought he'd gotten away with it. But then later on, the police brought him in for questioning, and they shined a UV light on his face. This is what it looked like. It's on the right there. His face is glowing green. He was caught red-handed, or green-faced. This is kind of how God sees us, right? I mean, we can carry on like nothing's wrong, but it's like God sees us in UV. What do you think you'd look like? Would you be spotless? Or are there some things you're not so keen to be seen? We can see that this obvious uncleanness of skin disease and mold for the Israelites, it shows us how God sees us. So the obviousness was the first thing. Let's look at a second quality of this uncleanness. And you're probably wondering why I had arguably the most uncomfortable chapter read out for us, chapter 15. I mean, why this chapter of all chapters? Well, I wanted us to read this one out for a good reason. See, we can see that all these things that made the Israelites unclean here, they were things that came out of them. Childbirth, semen, period blood are all things that come out of us. And the third quality, there's nothing wrong with male orgasms or female periods. We shouldn't be ashamed of our bodies, and I don't want anyone to be. But there's something taboo or uncomfortable about this, isn't there? I mean, even though childbirth is a beautiful thing, it's a private thing, right? I mean, I wouldn't know, but I'm guessing it's not something that you'd invite all your friends to come and watch, right? No? See, there's something a little uncomfortable about this chapter. I think I'm a little sick of reading the word discharge or omission. It makes me cringe. But I think that's the point. See, I want to jump forward briefly to Mark chapter 7 again, which we've already read, and we read last week. Now, Jesus here, he's talking to some religious leaders who are complaining that Jesus' disciples are eating without washing their hands. Now, after Jesus shows that these people, how hypocritical these people are, and how they expect others to follow all their rules, Jesus says this. He says, "Listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing outside a person can defile them by going into them. Rather, it is what comes out of a person that defiles them." Well, what does Jesus mean here? Well, let's keep reading. He goes on to say, "What comes out of a person is what defiles them. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and defile a person." So the mystery is revealed. See, Jesus is showing us what really makes us unclean before God. And it's not this ritual or outward uncleanness. It's all the evil things that come from our hearts. And it's not just the things we say or do. Jesus says it's even our evil thoughts that defile us. See, just like those things in Leviticus 15 that came out of the body and made the Israelites unclean, and they make us feel quite uncomfortable, Jesus is showing us a far more uncomfortable reality here. Our uncleanness that is so obvious to God, it comes from our hearts. See, we are unclean right to the very core. What comes out of your heart? Have you lusted after someone in your thoughts? Or hated someone? Or have you desired something that someone else had? Have you been arrogant in your heart? Have you fantasized about what you would do with more money? Have you torn someone down in your thoughts? Well, Jesus says that you're unclean. And therefore, you can't approach God safely. I reckon deep down we all know this. When we've thought these things or said or done these things, we kind of feel that dirtiness, don't we? We feel like there's something in the way of us and God. So what do we do then? So far, I've only given you bad news. We're all unclean. And God, He sees it so clearly. What do we do? How can we be cleansed? Well, again, let's go back to our passage and then we'll see what the Israelites were told to do. Well, in chapter 12, a woman who gave birth is told to bring a lamb for a burnt offering and a dove for a purification offering. In chapter 14, a person with a skin disease is told to wash with water and then bring some more sacrifices, a guilt offering, a sin offering, and a burnt offering, be sprinkled with blood 7 times. Later in chapter 14, an unclean house is also to have some sacrifices. And there are more in chapter 15, which we read. Now, I'm not going to go into all the little details here, because there is a lot. But I want to draw your attention to one big reoccurring practice. You see, there's often sacrifices and blood involved. You might think this sounds strange. I mean, how is blood supposed to clean them? And you're right, it is a little weird. But what this is it's God showing the Israelites that in order for them to be made clean before Him, that there's a cost. There needs to be blood. There needs to be some sacrifice. Okay, that's great, but we don't offer sacrifices anymore, and it's not like there's an altar set up in Rundle Mall or something where I can go and get cleansed, so I'm still kind of in trouble here. What do we do? Well, again, we're going to jump forward. This time, we're going to jump forward to Hebrews chapter 9, verse 13, and the words are behind me. The blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer sprinkled on those who are unclean sanctify them so that they are outwardly clean. How much more then will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered Himself unblemished to God, cleanse our consciences from acts that lead to death so that we may serve the living God? Friends, Jesus has already done this. He has already sacrificed Himself, and He's cleansed us by His blood. So, we don't need to offer anything. He has already offered Himself for us. See, just as we've seen all throughout Leviticus, God, He wants to dwell with His people. And that didn't stop with the Israelites. He has shown how much He wants to dwell with us. That He offered His only Son once and for all to make us clean so we can be with Him, so we can serve the living God. See, even the sacrifices and rituals of Leviticus, it only made the Israelites outwardly clean or ritually clean. But Jesus cleanses our hearts, the source of all our uncleanness, where all our evil thoughts and desires come from, that come out of us and defile us. So where do we go from here? Well, there's a very clear warning from this passage, isn't there? That when we come before God, which one day we all will, and we're found to be unclean, defiled, we'll be separated from God, and we'll die in our uncleanness. So, if you're not yet trusting in Jesus, can I say, accept his sacrifice for your uncleanness and be cleansed by his blood. And know that God sees you as spotless. You can come before him with confidence and assurance in Jesus' blood, knowing that you're completely clean. And if you are a follower of Jesus, then maybe you're like me. When I have these evil thoughts or desires, and I recognize my uncleanness, I often think that God doesn't want to deal with me right now. He's disappointed, and so I should just feel ashamed and stop praying, stop reading my Bible, and just, you know, feel bad about myself for a while to punish myself. Do you feel like that too? Don't you see how silly that is? See, by doing that, what we're actually saying is that Jesus' death was not enough for us. But friends, it is. We can have full confidence to approach our God always. And when we confess our own sin, he is faithful and just and will forgive us and purify us. So approach him. Come before your God with joy and thanksgiving, because he wants to be with you. And he's made a way for that to happen. Well, I want to finish with these verses from Hebrews chapter 10. Now, we've probably read this passage a lot throughout the series, but I want to read it again because it's just so encouraging to hear these words. It should be on the screen now. Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is his body, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with the full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we professed, for he who promised is faithful. So how do we approach God and not die? Well, it's through Jesus, who died for us. Let me pray. Heavenly Father, thank you that you long to dwell with your people. Lord, we know that you see all things and you know us completely. We confess to you the sinful thoughts that come from our unclean hearts. And we recognize that these things have separated us from you. Father, thank you for loving us. Thank you for cleansing us by giving up your Son to die in our place. Please help us to approach you with full confidence, trusting in the sufficiency of Jesus' blood, and holding on to the hope that one day we'll be with you forever.